Well, Mr. Faraday, it seems to me somewhat unusual to mark an exhibit that is testimony from the record that we're now creating, because it will be part of the record. So I guess my suggestion is that we use it. I don't know that there's any reason to doubt its accuracy, and simply refer to it as part of the record, and if we need to read portions of it, we can do that. And I guess that would be my preference.
That is fine, Mr. Hearing Officer. Our intent here is simply to make it clear that when we're referring to what a previous protestant witness said, for example, that we are referring to what was actually said.
Right.
It's illustrative for those,
right,
for those purposes.
Sure.
And it may make sense that it be marked and admitted as an exhibit, particularly because the record in this case is an audible record, at least at this point. We do intend to provide the hearing officer with a complete transcript for the hearing officer's use. But this is the written transcript that it makes it, I believe, easier to follow along.
Well, let's use it for illustrative purposes for now. And if there's a need or something, we all feel that it would be worthwhile to have it admitted, then let's do that. Okay? All right, Mr. Wood, I would remind you, you're under oath. Mr. Faraday, you may question, and we can refer to this transcript liberally from my perspective. If we need to read portions of it so that Mr. Wood understands what the statements are. I suspect you want to contrast these statements with perhaps Mr. Wood's opinion of what was said.
That's correct.
Okay.
We would object to the use of any of this transcript and this witness to try to impeach another witness if that is their intent. If they're merely rebutting, that's different. If they're attempting to impeach Dr. Ralston through this witness and his transcript testimony, we would like a continuing objection shown in the record that we object to it as improper impeachment.
What's
they had a chance to cross-examine Dr. Ralston, and I don't think they're now using the proper method of impeachment if that's what they're trying to do.
Why do you feel that it's an improper method of impeachment?
You didn't ask the witness about it and give him a chance to explain his answer. Now you're coming in with another expert witness and trying to impeach his testimony.
To me, Mr. Smith, that's the very nature of this rebuttal testimony. If there's a conflict in the testimony, the person who comes on can be asked whether they heard testimony of someone and then contrast that or rebut that testimony, and I think that's exactly what we're doing.
If it's only rebuttal, we don't have any problem with it.
All right, let's proceed. At least right now, the objection's overruled. Mr. Thorne.
Clarifying question. So then is it potentially appropriate for us, based on how this rebuttal goes, that we could in fact recall Dr. Ralston if necessary?
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, you have a chance for rebuttal, or what I think they call is sir rebuttal. I think that's the term for
okay.
The protest. So anyway, you have that opportunity. Okay, Mr. Faraday.
Dr. Wood, I would like to inquire about your response to Dr. Ralston's statement at page 2 of the document that I've given you here, which is on page 2238 of the transcript, that the, quote, hydrological conceptual model is flawed, close quote, because there's, quote, inadequate information that indicates that the PGSA is laterally continuous on over into the Payette River area, close quote. I'd like to ask you a few questions about that, sir. First of all, conceptual model does not refer to a numerical computer model, does it, such as the M3 model or the Stacy Douglas model?
That's correct. It does not refer to the computer model.
It refers rather to the geological and hydrological framework that we've been discussing in this hearing?
That's correct. It concerns the geological and hydrogeological framework.
What is your response to Dr. Ralston's statement that the conceptual model is flawed because there is inadequate information that the PGSA is laterally continuous to the Payette Basin? Do you agree with Dr. Ralston on that?
No, I do not agree with Dr. Ralston. It is laterally continuous. Every piece of data I have examined has shown that it's laterally continuous over to the Payette Valley, over to the Letha area, and on on northwest to the New Plymouth area. When he says it's flawed, I just have a hard time. There are no flaws. These concepts of the hydrogeology of the Pierce Gulch Aquifer have been in publication since 1994, although the naming of the aquifer is more recent. But there's no problem with the geological model that's been presented. And I don't understand why that wording is used by Dr. Ralston.
Moving over to the next page of this illustrative exhibit, page 3, and page 2259, Dr. Ralston makes a statement that you, Dr. Wood, have produced a cross-section correlating the PGSA through to the Ted Dawes wells in the Payette Basin, and he calls that speculative because of the 18-mile distance involved. What's your response to that statement by Dr. Ralston?
Well, there's no speculation involved. There's no question that there's a very thick mudstone unit overlain by sands within which is the Pierce Gulch Sand Aquifer. So I don't know why. These have been published scientifically, and we don't publish information like this as speculation. It's normally not even allowed by the reviewers of the journals. If you're going to speculate, you name it as speculation. This has never been a speculation. There's no question about the correlation of the top of the mudstone, base of the sand, across over into the Payette Valley, looking at the existing wells, and particularly the geophysical logs, which is a very, very clear signature. We've known it since 1994.
What kind of a depositional environment, you just mentioned mudstone, but what kind of depositional environment does provide this signature that you can correlate across those distances, Dr. Wood?
Okay, well, as these concepts have evolved, it's a very deep lake that produces the mudstones, and then finally the lake finds an outlet through Hell's Canyon and sands prograde out over the basin, and that's the situation that has occurred here in the western Snake River Plain. It's a very widespread geological feature, and it's not clear that Dr. Ralston appreciated the significance of the larger geologic framework. We correlate this major break from mudstone to sand over most of the western plain, down to the Snake River south of Nampa, and clear west to the New Plymouth and on to the Weezer area, and even across the border to wells over in Oregon.
Is it your opinion that the correlation of these cross sections through the Ted Dawes wells is supported by reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
Yes, there's a very reasonable degree of scientific certainty that this correlation of the top of the mudstone base of the sand is a good correlation, and that the sand unit and this correlation is continuous over into the Payette Valley.
Could you respond to Dr. Ralston's statement at page 2259 again in this transcript that he, quote, wouldn't have necessarily connected, close quote, the signatures for the Orico gas well and the El Paso natural gas well as being geologically in the, quote, same sequence?
Well, I guess I wonder what we mean by wouldn't necessarily have done it. If I saw this in a scientific review, then I would require that somebody making that statement show me all of his alternative lines of correlation. But of course, that was not done, simply because this is the most sound and defensible correlation between wells.
Were these correlations that you speak of through to the Ted Dawes well in the Payette Valley, the Oracle Gas, which is the Oracle Gas well and the Weber State well, were those correlations done as a result of your work for M3?
No, we made that correlation back in 1994. We indicated that the top of the mudstone base of the major delta sequence could be seen in wells over in the Payette Basin. And that's been recurring in all of our subsequent publications. So this is way before M3. It was in a 1994 publication. It was in the work that I had done for the Treasure Valley Hydrologic Project back in the early 90s, and in publications in 2002 and 2004.
Turning now to page 4 of this illustrative document, this shows page 2014 of the transcript. I'm focusing now on a statement by Mr. Vincent on this page to the effect that, quote, there can be a shallow fault in the PGSA that does not have any effect whatsoever on the basement rocks, end quote. Could you comment, please, on that and give us your opinion of that statement with regard to a shallow fault affecting only the PGSA?
Yeah, I don't believe I understand his concept of geology here, but if a shallow, let's say an upper layer in the sedimentary sequence is faulted, then it extends down. The original fault also extends to great depth and down into the basement rock. So we can see faults in the basement rock that won't necessarily propagate upward because the faulting was over and new layers were deposited over. But to run the process backwards, where you have the upper layers faulted and not the lower layers, is geologically incorrect.
I recall that you prepared a figure that was, I think, included in Exhibit 45. Maybe you could turn to that. It's Figure 2 of Exhibit 45. Do you have that there?
Yeah, I have that figure. I'm not sure that... Are we ready to talk about it, or shall we...
Let's let the hearing officer find it.
What figure, Mr. Carter?
Exhibit
Figure 2.
45, Figure 2. That's it. That's correct, yeah.
Dr. Wood, you just spoke about the deep faults in the basement rocks that do not extend, I believe you said, to the upper sections. Is that, again, what this shows?
Yeah, let me clarify again. I looked through all of our seismic data that we've accumulated over the years, and to see if anywhere we have an imaging of the Pierce Gulch sand aquifer, and we do indeed have it as we go north of Middleton towards the Josephson siding on this seismic line. And that is about the Pierce Gulch sand aquifer as it's labeled on this diagram. And what I'm showing here is that we have faulting, very clear faulting in the Miocene basement and some of the lower lake sediment, but that line shown as the Pierce Gulch sand aquifer is a continuous line. It's not faulted on this section. Now, of course, it's only this picture, and we don't have data in the upper 1,000 feet from these old chevron lines because of the way they were acquired. But I've looked through all the seismic data to see if this contention that there's faulting in the Pierce Gulch sand aquifer, and it's just not there. In basin-wide, I would say,
with regard to
data that's available to us, yeah.
Thank you. With regard to the four slanted lines that depict faults in this figure two, does this accurately depict where those faults terminate as they move upward?
Yeah, it certainly depicts where they move upward on the on the three sort of slanted black lines. The Middleton Fault, we're a little uncertain about. It could propagate higher. It's not clear from the data.
Have you looked for faulting in the shallow section, let's say the upper 1,000 feet in the North Ada area?
Yeah, we take faulting in the shallow section very seriously because of earthquake hazards and examination of this region about Boise for earthquake hazards. And if we see it, of course, it has major implications. And so we've looked at it. We've looked at it responsibly. And we don't see major faulting in the shallow section.
Now, there can be slumps and other minor offsets in shallow sections such as the PGSA. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, there can be what are called growth faults or glide faults, which are common in deltaic sands in the Gulf Coast. That's a possibility to have sort of landslide-type breaks in these sands. But I also want to clarify that we do see very small offset, a few feet of offset in some of the Pierce Gulch sands up in the Siemens Gulch landfill and towards the foothills. And they may be of that nature. We just have not seen a major significant fault that would have a hydrogeological implications in any of the Pierce Gulch sand exposures.
Those shallow faults that you've seen in the Seaman, or the offsets that you've seen in the Siemens Gulch area, those are in the order of what, a few feet?
A few feet, that's correct.
Would those cause any interruption at all if they were at depth in groundwater flow?
No, they're basically sand against sand and would have no interruption or create any kind of hydraulic barrier.
Do you recall the staff's testimony and their presentations in this hearing concerning the fact that a fault was detected through magnetometer survey in the deep section beneath the M3 Eagle Panhandle area? Do you recall that?
Yes, I do. In the staff's memo, they did make quite a bit about that fault that we identified from the magnetometer data, but I think they failed to realize that that's a fault in the deep volcanic rocks, and that's the limitation of the data. And they all, as I read through their memo, they sort of lost sight of what geological investigations are all about. And the idea from hydrologic was to try to gather and obtain as much data as we could about the geology and find out if it has hydrogeological significance. And in the case of this fault, the clean well test right next to the projected idea that this fault might propagate to the surface did not show any significant hydrologic barrier. So the idea was to look for features that might, but test them and see if they do, and if they do not, then it's not a problem. So I think that my impression was, in reading the staff memo, they kind of lost sight of how this geological investigation was designed and how we would do such a thing.
The staff indicated that the existence of this deep fault below the panhandle in the basement rocks creates an uncertainty as to groundwater flow in this case. What's your response to that, Dr. Wood?
Well, there's no evidence that there's a hydrogeologic barrier, and there is no uncertainty. A lot of the ideas about faults and the ideas about continuity of the aquifer to the Payette Basin are uncertainties that just don't exist. The staff has raised uncertainties that just aren't there. Searching for something, I guess, in the work that's been done. For an uncertainty.
The fault beneath the M3 Eagle Panhandle lies, it propagates up to approximately what depth, Dr. Wood?
Well, we don't know how high it propagates. We only know that it offsets the deep volcanic rocks, which are over 2,000 feet deep beneath that panhandle area. And we really don't have any information on how high it would propagate. but there's no indication that it propagates up into the Pierce Gulf Sand Aquifer.
Do you see any uncertainty concerning the proposition that the Pierce Gulf Sand Aquifer is robustly recharged?
No, it would appear that it is robustly recharged by the regional aquifer system.
Do you know of any evidence that the PGSA is compartmentalized by fault boundaries?
No, no such fault boundaries have been shown scientifically to form major hydrogeologic boundaries on the Pierce Gulch Sand Aquifer, certainly in the M3 areas and in the areas that we're considering here.
Do you think the compartmentalization theory is a subject of reasonable uncertainty in this case?
No, I don't believe there's been any evidence showing that the Pierce Gulch Sand Aquifer has major hydrogeologic boundaries due to faulting.
Have you seen anything in the record of this case, and I'd like you to answer this with regard to your expertise as a hydrogeologist, have you seen anything in the record of this case, including Dr. Ralston's or staff's testimony, to suggest that sufficient groundwater supplies are not available for the M3 Eagle project?
No. All the data that I've seen thus far, including all the testimony, would indicate that groundwater supplies are available beneath the M3 site.
Thank you. No further questions.
Okay. Questions, Mr. Thornton?